Hello and welcome back to the MJA podcast. My name is Kate Swanell. Today our topic is syncope, specifically how syncope is triaged in emergency rooms. Dr. Jason Chan is an emergency medicine staff specialist at Redcliffe Hospital in southeast Queensland. He and his co-authors have designed a study protocol to attempt to validate the Canadian syncope risk score in an Australian setting. Hopefully the end result will be better risk stratification for patients and cost savings to the health system. Jason is my guest today. What is syncope and what causes it?
I mean, the definition for syncope is a temporary loss of consciousness due to cerebral hypoperfusion. Now, that's a mouthful, but essentially what it means is whenever there's a process that interrupts blood flow to your brain, you faint or you have a syncopal episode.
What causes it exactly? Do we know?
Well, syncope is actually a symptom rather than a diagnosis. And I guess we can think of syncope in two kind of broad categories. And one is sort of a benign, a less worrying kind of syncope. And the other one is more of a malignant or what we call an unheralded syncope, which has more serious underlying causes to it. And some of these serious underlying causes can be related to, say, strokes, bleeding into the brain, subarachnoid hemorrhages, gastrointestinal bleeding, cardiac disease, pulmonary embolisms, arrhythmias, I guess, is the main thing. And the other ones, the early ones I mentioned, the benign type of syncopes are the ones that most people are familiar with, where we call it a reflex syncope or vasovagal, where, you know, patients faint after prolonged standing or at the sight of blood. So it's a reflex situation where your blood vessels dilate and you temporarily lose blood flow to your brain, and that makes you faint.
So when a person turns up to an ER after or during an episode of syncope, what does the emergency physician do? How do you know or how do you find out what is causing this particular syncope?
That's a very good question, Kate. I mean, the main issue with syncope is that, as I mentioned before, it's a temporary loss of consciousness. So by the time the patient arrives in the ED, majority of them have already recovered back to their normal mental state. So what you're faced with is a patient who kind of looks normal, looks well, and can't recall what happened. So part of our job is to try and take a good history, perform a good physical examination, and order the relevant tests. So from a syncope point of view, a lot of the history is based on suspicion or reports from bystanders or witnesses that saw the event happen. The patient themselves can sometimes not be very helpful because they're the ones who kind of blacked out during the whole episode.
So
it's hard for them to tell you what happened after that. In most cases, like for the vasovagal type syncopes, they'll usually have some sort of prodrome. So they'll tell you they might have felt it coming on, such as feeling a bit sweaty, feeling a bit nauseous, feeling a bit dizzy before they actually pass out. So you can kind of get the history for that. And if you get that sort of history, then it's more suggestive of vasovagal, which is a benign sort of syncope.
Yes.
The other syncope, which tends to happen where patients can't recall the history, is the unheralded syncope. So 1 minute they're awake, next minute they're on the ground, and they can't remember or can't tell you what happened in between. We have a basic standard of tests that we do, sort of ECGs basically, to look at the rhythm of the heart, blood pressure, check their pulse, check their vitals, and perform a complete cardiac and neurological exam. Again, majority of these things end up being normal because the process was so transient.
So what percentage of syncope cases require hospitalisation?
Once we're done with the ED evaluation and we don't seem to find any other suggestive cause, the disposition, I guess, whether they get admitted or we're happy to send them home, really depends on the risk stratification. So basically, we kind of make a sort of a judgment as to, look, if they've got high risk features on history, such as they're elderly or they've got some history of cardiac disease, that makes them more likely to have a more significant cause for their syncope, then we usually admit them. Now, about 50% of patients with syncope who present to the ED end up coming to getting admitted to hospital.
And of those admissions, how many of them are effective in the sense that you find a specific cause and you start a course of treatment? And how many end up being sent home after a few days with no real diagnosis?
It's about the same. It's about 50% or half of these patients who get admitted get some sort of diagnostic test that reveals the underlying cause, and the other 50% end up being discharged without any obvious cause found. So the only benefit they had was the benefit of time to make sure that nothing else sinister happened, you know, in that period. And usually, I guess the main thing that we admit patients for is for cardiac telemetry, because arrhythmias is one of the things that can happen transiently, mm-hmm. and you really have no evidence of it if they end up having a normal ECG on your initial investigation. There are many syncope risk scores out there to date. A lot of them have been developed over years and validated in different populations. Mm-hmm. The Canadian syncope risk score is one of the latest. It was only developed about 3 years ago. And up till now, it's only been validated in the Canadian setting. Yeah. So the authors recently released their study, a multi-center trial validating their study, and it's one of the largest syncope trials to date. The results they produce were quite robust and promising. So I think, you know, we're still in that stage where we're trying to find the holy grail of syncope risk scores, if you could put it that way.
Yeah,
because you know it's such a difficult condition to pin down as to what exactly is causing it, and we seem to admit a lot of patients because we simply don't know how it will affect the patient if we send them home.
Yeah. I'm chatting today with emergency specialist Dr. Jason Chan about syncope. His study protocol is available now at mja.com.au. And, like all our research, is open access. Don't forget you can find our podcasts via iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, or at our website. Back to our chat. The whole problem, for want of a better word, with syncope is it takes up a lot of time and resources to figure out what's going on. And even then, you can be admitted and still have more time and resources put into you, but still come out without really knowing what's going on.
Yes, exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head.
This study protocol that you guys are publishing, was it because you're unsatisfied or dissatisfied with the Canadian syncope risk score, or do you just want to validate it properly?
We're more, I guess, looking at trying to find a risk score that is robust, reliable, and reproducible enough to instill confidence in clinicians using it by the bedside. And the Canadian syncope risk score is, on the surface, looks like a promising tool to be used, but we haven't had any experience in using it. It's not widely known, to my knowledge, in Australia, and it hasn't been validated, as far as we're aware, in an Australian setting. So all these other tools that have been developed over time, people have developed them nationally and internationally. Mm-hmm. And I guess we're trying to do the same with the Canadian syncope risk score. You know, they've only been validated in Canada. Yep. We want to see how it performs here.
Right.
And look, if it does show that, you know, it's reasonably reliable and we can safely predict patients that are safe to go home. And I think that's the main thing, is that we're trying to identify patients with low risk, who don't really need to come in hospital, mm-hmm. because we're admitting a lot of these patients and we're doing a whole lot. We're investing a lot of resources, time, staff, and like you said, at the end of the day, we're still none the wiser.
Tell us a little bit about the design of the study and why you made the choices you've made in terms of that design.
Yeah, so the study was designed as a prospective observational study. Prospective because we needed to collect specific patient data in order to calculate the Canadian syncope risk score for each patient. But it's observational in a sense that because when we designed the study, we weren't aware of any sort of obvious validation studies. So, you know, we didn't want an unvalidated tool to be used by clinicians to influence their judgment as yet. So part of this process is to try to see if this tool is reliable enough for us to implement it by the bedside.
Are you comparing what happened to that patient with what might have happened if they'd used the Canadian score?
Exactly. Yeah. So, as it stands, patients that were recruited to the study were managed by physicians, and the disposition decision is left entirely up to them. Practice as usual. What we then do is we follow up these patients 30 days from their initial presentation to see what's happened to them, if any of them suffered any bad outcomes.
Right.
Now, for the patients that were admitted, it's particularly useful, I guess, you know, if you were an admitted patient and we calculated your score and you were actually low risk, but you were admitted to hospital and we subsequently followed you up and said, look, at 30 days, really, nothing bad happened to you. This is the cohort, I guess, we're looking at in terms of potentially avoidable emissions. And this, in a sense, might lead to some sort of cost benefit by avoidable emissions. Because when you get admitted, it's not just the cost of the bed and the hospital stay. It's also subsequent investigations that you might have at all the time you spend in hospital. So it's a lot of it is hidden costs and unseen harms as well for downstream testing. From a clinician's perspective, you know, sometimes we think we don't know what's going on with this patient. Maybe it's safer to admit them to hospital.
Yeah,
but in reality, there are a lot of harms from coming into hospital. And we know that you get hospital-acquired infections, you get line infections, you get complications from people doing things to you.
So what's the timeline of the study? When are you expecting to have a set of results?
The study ran from March last year. We've just finished up our last of our follow-up over 1 year. We have the data. We're just analysing it now to see what the results are, and hopefully that shouldn't be too long.
Great.
We'll probably have something after mid-year this year.
Yeah. Are you expecting any follow-up study to it, Jason?
Yeah, when we did this, we didn't anticipate this to be a huge study. It's more of a pilot to kind of give us an idea of what kind of signal we're going to get.
Yes.
If it proves that the syncope risk score is indeed reliable and can potentially lead to some sort of more efficient use of resources and cost benefits in the healthcare system, we might move to a second phase of a study, which might include a multi-center implementation trial. So actually using the risk score at the bedside for clinicians and seeing what the difference is in terms of before and after. It's important to note that in the day and age when we have to recognize that the healthcare system is coming under more scrutiny and there's more restriction to resources, we just need to be better at using what we have for the benefit not only for syncope patients but also for other patients that probably need to come into hospital as well. We've got a finite space, finite resources, finite staffing. We need to be quite judicious in how we manage these patients. And you know, there's a climate of overcrowding in emergency departments, access blocked to inpatient beds. So all these things come at a cost.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.